I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Mike Lupica, MSNBC and MLB.com. Welcome to the Friday Conference Championship edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, which is obviously the continuation of our long-running show on ESPN. And guys, after what has been a compelling and fascinating NFL season, we get two richly interesting conference championship games. We get the Rams and the Saints, who have been the two best teams in the NFC all season long. And we get the Chiefs, who have been the best team in the AFC all season long, against the Patriots, who have been the heavyweight champion of the sport, it feels like, for 20 years. Let us start with this game. And I know that it is random that it fell this way, but they're going to play the second game outdoors in Kansas City in an Arctic freeze day. And the question is, do the Patriots have enough left to beat Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs team this season on the road?
What is the goal of any team in any sport as it enters its postseason? It is to be playing its best possible ball, whatever the sport may be.
Yep.
This is where the Patriots are, coming off their very best game of the year in a healthy state. There are, gentlemen, no excuses available for them. They have everything that they have, all their weapons, such as they are now, you know, the impaired Gronkowski, etc. He's there. He still can block. Okay, so they have this. They're in a terrific state to play this game, even though it's on the road. And the only reason it's on the road is one play against Miami. But anyway, but they're of all the four teams, there's not. They're the one who are absolutely peaking at the right moment.
They have. I'm not putting anything into the past of either one of these teams, except where they are right now. To echo your point, Bob. Because if you really go back over the last five games for the Patriots, they lost that game to Miami, ridiculously. They lost to Pittsburgh, and they finished the regular season by beating Buffalo and the Jets, which is meaningless. So none of that matters, because when you watch what they did to the Chargers, you say, okay, this is the flipped switch. This is the New England that says, we don't waste time on games and the part of the season that doesn't matter to us at this stage. We know how to turn it on in the playoffs, and you cannot deny what they did to the Chargers, which were everybody's darling team and a team with momentum and all the rest of it. So there is no way that an intelligent fan can now say, oh, they can't keep up with the Chiefs. You can't. I've said it before, I'll say it again, you pick against New England at your own risk here. And Tom Brady's intelligence and the ability to read the defense, to me, is going to be the difference as to whether the New England Patriots are in another Super Bowl or not. Because he has a chance against, and we all know this, the Kansas City defense has not been great this year. And
in particular, last week.
Yeah, they were great last week, not great this year. So which is it? You know, are they last week, or are they the course of the sum of the season? They're not great in the red zone in particular. They're not great over the middle of the field. That's where Tom Brady has really good vision and can always find that guy that no other quarterback can. To me, that's going to be the difference in this game.
And here's the thing, and Bob, Mitch, I agree with you about the Kansas City defense, but Kansas City's defense was great last week, the way the Patriots were great last week. So, Bobby, if we're going to say the Patriots are playing their best ball now, we have a right to say the Kansas City's defense looked like it was playing its best ball. So that sets up this game. And I've been thinking about this when I looked at the weather for Kansas City. Bob, doesn't the weather in the visiting team city actually benefit the Patriots on Sunday?
Well, in theory, if for no other reason, and we know that that Brady has performed at a high level under these circumstances, and Mahomes has not been asked to, but this young man, I will be surprised if he is fazed by anything. We don't know how he's going to react to it. He's from Texas. He's never played in a game in these conditions, I don't believe, ever. So that'll be very interesting. But he has been so resourceful already. And the story from the Patriots' defensive point of view is, can they cope with the sheer athleticism of this young man? Because you get him out of the pocket, and he's more dangerous, perhaps, than he is in. He's for real. There is no question. So the weather is an interesting element, no question. We shall see.
And Bobby, by the way, it was interesting to me because we had all just had this conversation, and I laughed when I saw it this week. All the Aaron Rodgers comparisons coming out of Foxborough about this kid.
Well, in the terms of mobility, I would think that's a fair. He's a descendant. You know, he's a pup out of that litter. I think that's just as Brady from day one was clearly a pup out of the Joe Montana litter. This kid is a pup out of the Aaron Rodgers litter. Yes.
Don't you have the feeling that this game could be sort of one of two scenarios, that the Patriots play a tough game and just have a little bit more at the end, savvy, moxie, experience, whatever it is, and Brady gets another win and he and Belichick march on in a tough-fought, close game, or that this could be one of those moments where Kansas City just, you know, we've seen it in sports, where the young team just asserts itself and the era is over for the older team, and mm-hmm. and Kansas City ends up actually winning by a couple of touchdowns, and it's not as close as everybody thought it was going to be. Like, when it ends, type of thing for New England. The reason that I think that could happen is because when Kansas City wins, they win with a lot of big plays. You know, they are a big play team. They throw long passes. They have big runs. And the Patriots' defense, if you can find a flaw in it, again, this is the defense during the season, not maybe the defense this week or last week. They give up a lot of big plays. I think they're in the last five or six of the NFL to do that. And so, and a lot of those plays, by the way, if you remember when they played the Chiefs, on that game that everybody watched where they finally narrowly beat them, they gave up a lot of big plays. So I wouldn't be shocked if, I guess what I'm saying is I'd be more shocked if Kansas City wins by a field goal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Than if New England wins by a field goal. I think if Kansas City wins, they're going to win. They're going to make a statement.
It could be Rocky Marciano versus Joe Lewis, that scenario. Okay, mm-hmm. I'll go with that.
Those are prize fighters, right?
To illustrate, if anybody in our audience, Michael, I don't care if they're 5 years old, have never heard of Joe Lewis, then why are they listening to us at all? Now, next
Vince
question.
Coleman, Vince Coleman. Never
all right, listen.
Jackie Robinson.
To illustrate what you're saying, Mitch, Tyreek Hill has, in his career against a limited career against the New England Patriots, twice had 75-yard touchdown receptions.
Right.
They are, and he is the guy that scares the bleep out of me, and I would think Brian Flores, who happens to be the defensive coordinator and perhaps a designated new coach of the Miami Dolphins, of the New England Patriots. That kid is scary. The great variable in both these games, guys, though, and I think you know it's logical and likely it's going to happen, is that there's an unknown that's going to happen. The blocked field punt that was turned into a touchdown for the Colts, although not that it altered the final score. You know, the recovered fumble, such as we had last week in the Patriots game after the punt. And something like that will happen in one of these two games. Guaranteed that will affect the game.
Can I throw a number out here that astounded me? I had to make sure I was looking at it right. You know who the leading rusher is for the Kansas City Chiefs? By a mile.
Pat Mahomes.
Kareem Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Who's not
playing.
He
doesn't play for them anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even close. He had 800 yards, 800-plus yards when he was tossed out of the league. Patrick Mahomes is the next biggest rusher. Then Spencer Ware, Damian Williams, who we saw had a big game, and then Tyreek Hill. So it's astounding what the Chiefs have been able to do considering how run-heavy they were when Hunt was playing for them. And I wonder if that's going to come into play here against a tougher Patriot defense where, you know, you're going to have to get it done in the air. And that puts all the pressure on a kid who's in, what, his 17th NFL game, whatever, wherever we are counting in Patrick Mahomes' career.
Mitch, I agree with you about Kareem Hunt, okay? And I agree with you about I still believe this will be a quarterback game. Which amazing about Brady's run, okay, And, you know, I went back and looked up because Mike Greenberg had this thing the other day. Was LeBron making 8 straight NBA finals? What was a greater achievement? 8 straight AFC championship games or 8 straight NBA finals? And I think it's LeBron by a long shot, but that's another conversation for another day, okay? Brady hasn't run into many immortals playing his position on the other side of the field. Peyton Manning, obviously. He beat Andrew Luck one time when Andrew Luck was a kid. When they beat Philip Rivers the other day, you know, Philip Rivers is having one of his career seasons. But very rarely, other than Peyton, at this time of year, have they gone up against a quarterback who has had the kind of season that Patrick Mahomes has had. It's like watching Steph Curry play football. It's that kind of flair and creativity. And now, again, yes, did he do it in his first shot? Yeah, he did. Now the stakes are dialed up exponentially because the Super Bowl is on the line in conditions to which he is not accustomed. And I think at the end of the night, because they're playing the second game on Sunday, when we look at which quarterback had a better game, not by a lot, I think that's the team that's going to be going to the Super Bowl.
And I'll throw a little add-on to what you just said, is having an amazing season, but a season isn't over until the last game is played.
Right.
And we have seen this before with young athletes who have amazing runs, and then the last game is just a clunker, and the story gets written like an amazing season that ended with a game that he wants to forget.
Cam Newton in the Super Bowl, Mitch. Cam Newton in the Super Bowl.
Perfect example. Brady gets a nod for what he has done before. You have to. I mean, you just have to nod to experience. He has complete seasons in his resume. He had this season ended with a Super Bowl. This season ended with a Super Bowl. This season isn't with a Super Bowl. Until Mahomes plays that last game, it's all part of the same story. It's all part of, you know, the buildup, the confidence that you have, the role that you get on is all relative to how you end it. And we haven't seen the end of it yet. So all I'm throwing out there is he is young and he could have one of those young games against a team, particularly if they get ahead early, you know, and they have to play from behind. Kansas City frequently runs out to big leads because of the kind of points that they score. So I'm totally fascinated by this matchup. You can make a case for 5 different scenarios and all of them could possibly happen.
What do you think, Mitch? How do you think the kid's going to show up on Sunday?
Because it's at home, I have a little more confidence in him being great. But he is going against Bill Belichick in the playoffs, whatever defensive scheme they come up with.
A name we haven't really mentioned yet until now.
And, you know, you can talk about Bill Belichick in the regular season. That's one guy. But you talk about Bill Belichick with a week to prepare for somebody in the playoffs. And my guess is he's been preparing for 2 weeks for him because I think they probably knew that this is who they were going to play.
Probably since they played him in the regular season.
Well, right. They played him before and they beat him before. And that's the thing he hasn't gone up against. And you know, Bob, from watching New England all this time, they could come out with a totally new look on Sunday. Like, where'd that come from?
They're the chameleon team. Everyone knows that. That's the calling card offensively. And even defensively. But you can't prepare off of what they did the week before. They're immensely resourceful. He is immensely resourceful. He always has coordinators who are absolutely. My takeaway from the first game, 43-40, October 14th, the night during the World Series, by the way, that's how far back it was, is that, yes, the Patriots won the game, but that after that game, right away I said, Kansas City is going out of here saying we can beat these guys, especially if we play them at home. And this is now the weather might be the variable. I don't know, but I think they're going to carry that feeling into this game. We can beat these guys. We don't feel that we lost that game in Foxborough. We feel that we ran out of time. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to go in with a large amount of confidence against the Patriots.
Don't you think that if Kansas City wins this game, it changes the whole AFC dynamic, which has up till now basically been, you can count on the Patriots, and if they don't go to the Super Bowl, it's probably something weird happened, you know, or they got injured or something like that. Because Pittsburgh's, you know, moving on. Their window is closed. And who maybe Indy, you know, I don't know. They certainly didn't look very good last week. But if Kansas City with this kid has a great game and knocks off the Patriots, don't you think coming into next year and the years after, it's sort of the Kansas City Chiefs and are we looking at, you know, the fading New England Patriots? That, you know, the Kansas City has all upside on this with the age of their players, and you know, New England has got to kind of do it now. I mean, but with Gronkowski and Brady, these are not guys who are getting any younger, one injury away from, you know, the possible end of their careers. And so I just think there's a lot more on the line than just this game here. There's sort of the whole tapestry of the AFC sort of changes if Kansas City definitively wins this game.
Well, Brady will be 42 next year playing. I mean, it's got. We keep saying it's got to end sometime. And quite frankly, when they were 2-2 this year, I was a doom and gloomer. I can't shy away from it. I can't pretend to give you alternate facts. I was a doom and gloomer, and I said we are looking at the beginning of the rest of the first day of the rest of our Patriots watching lives, which meant that I didn't think they were going to come out of this season very well. And here they are. So
I first wrote off Brady. I think he had a bad game against Johnny Lujack one time when they were all still wearing.
Remember that one, Mike?
Huh?
three picks. I remember that one.
Yeah, no, yeah. He just, and then I watched him last, Mitch, I watched him last Sunday, and I always ask you guys this question. If you didn't know what year it was last Sunday watching Tom Brady play football, you would have thought, oh, okay, that's any year in this run. But now we have to get around to the one elephant in the room. We talked about it the other day. We may be talking about it on Monday, okay? How long it has been since the great New England Patriots of Belichick and Brady and owned by Robert Kraft have won a freaking playoff game on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been 9 years, something like that. It's not
2007, Robert.
All right. And, you know, this year they lost five games. Not only did they lose five games on the road, but they lost them to five teams that did not make the playoffs. Now, does that matter now? I started off my dissertation by saying they're peaking and coming off their best game of the year, which they were, which they are. And so does that matter now? I mean, of course they'd rather be at home. But are they prepared to play their best game of the season on the road on Sunday? Perhaps we'll see.
Hey, Bob and Mitch, here's my question. And Mitch raised Belichick because, you know, we used to talk about this all the time. Everybody talked about Brady versus Manning. That wasn't the rivalry. The rivalry was Belichick versus Manning, okay? Yeah. And there have been times when he had 2 weeks to prepare for the Super Bowl and he still lost to the Giants. Okay, I get all that. Mitch, how do you scheme against Patrick Mahomes, who plays the game in this unconventional way? Do you say, okay, we're going to make them beat us on the ground? Are we going to keep them in the pocket? You can't keep them in the pocket. It to me, that's the fascinating element in this game. How is Belichick going to go after this kid?
Well, you can only do what you have players to do. And, you know, if you say, okay, we're going to keep them between the tackles and we're not going to let this roll out outside the underhand sling stuff, you got to have the guys to rush them from the outside. If you say, hey, we think we can cover the receivers there and we'll put pressure on him that way and he's going to run out of options, you got to have guys who can do that kind of covering. But the one element, Mike, to answer your question, that you have to figure in that Belichick does, and this is why he's a great coach, is when he coaches defense against a quarterback, he doesn't just coach it from the defensive side, meaning long drives that keep the guy off the field.
Right.
That's one way that you coach against Patrick Mahomes.
The Parcells theory against the Bills in the Super Bowl.
Exactly right. And nobody is better at finding that one receiver for 8 yards when you need seven on 3rd and 7 than Tom Brady. And their approach with Sonny Michel and all that may be, hey, we're going to grind this out. And we're going to win time of possession on this thing. And we're going to take a long time to score. And Kansas City gives up yards. You know, that their defense, at least traditionally, at least this season, gives up yards. Let's use that and let's tilt the clock in our favor. And let's, you know, get Mahomes kind of out of his groove because he is a groove quarterback. And then when he gets back on the field after one of those Tom Brady 5.5, 6 minute drives, if we can pull a 3 and out, we get back on the field again and here we come again and do it. Now, that's part of your defense for the Kansas City offense, in addition to who you put out in the defensive side. If I were doing it, and I'm hardly the mind that Bill Belichick is, that would be a big part of my strategy.
But
is
Mitch,
keep Patrick Mahomes on the bench.
But Mitch, see, this is what happens when you've had a week to break down game film now. When you, because I can tell now you've been looking at that.
Well, I'm looking at it as we're doing our podcast. I've got it all up on my screen.
You're still looking at coach Bob. Yeah. He's still clearly looking at coach's film, not just
the coach. I don't get into the
commercials. Oh, yeah, the All-22. He's got that. You make a very good point, because last week they started off the game against the Chargers with a drive that lasted over 7.5 minutes and had another one later in the game like that. And so it's conceivable that they are capable of doing that. If you can get a implement a running game such as they had last week. The offensive line had a great day, had a great game, and gave Michelle plenty of room.
And who had, by the way, who had a great defense coming into that game? The Chargers. You know, that's what they were. Everybody was talking about, and they just made
seven
them look like
defensive
amateurs.
Backs and all that stuff.
Yeah. One guy we named, a name we must mention before we move on to the other game, and would have been heretical as recently as a year ago to suggest that in any game the Patriots would have the second best tight end on the field. But the fact is, that I think that if you were to put all the tight ends in the NFL on the open market to play a game, who do you want to win with tonight? It would be Travis Kelce.
Yep.
And I know the guy in San Francisco caught more passes, Kelce's the man. And that's a guy the Patriots have to be very concerned with, because they have had games where they've been vulnerable. The linebackers have been vulnerable to mid-level pass receptions, and this guy's really, really, really good. So he's a guy to keep your eye on.
Mitch, why do I one last time think that – despite the history and despite it's been over a decade since they won a playoff game on the road, why am I thinking, even after what we've seen from Patrick Mahomes, that one last time, after we did write them off again, the Patriots are going to be the Patriots on Sunday?
Well, because we've lived long enough to see it. I think, Bob, what you said is really important, and I would throw that onto my answer to you, Mike, about the defense. One of the ways that you might see Bill Belichick's scheme for them is to just say, we're taking Travis Kelce out of the game. He's the guy we're going to take out, not Patrick Mahomes. We're taking Patrick Mahomes' bailout out of the game. Now you try to beat us without him, because he is that 103 receptions. He almost led the team in passing yards. Only Tyreek Hill had a little bit more, and for a tight end to do that, that's pretty amazing. And if you take that's the comfort zone for Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball, is find Kelce, because he knows he'll catch it, and he knows he's big, and he knows, you know, he can get that first down. He can catch it 3 yards shy of a first down and drag people across the line with it. Take him away and make Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins or these other guys be the guys he throws to, and maybe that changes Patrick Mahomes' view of the game. And so I'm glad you brought up that name, because his performance, Bob, is going to be very indicative. He has a great game. I see Kansas City winning. Are we ready for the next game, gentlemen?
Yes.
Are we ready for Los Angeles, New Orleans, which is actually the first game, which, again, I almost feel like we're jinxing it to talk so much about how great these games are going to be, because it's 1-2 and 1-2. And how many times have we seen that in the college ranks? You know, it's like, wow, we got the top four teams and the top four players, and the games stink. You know, and it's like, God, they were blowouts. So I hope these are close, great games. The Rams, New Orleans ought to be. It ought to be. Again, they have played each other too, and you know it was a close game that was played in New Orleans. New Orleans kind of ran away with it at the end when they had a big touchdown pass that again Drew Brees threw a long touchdown pass that separated them. But they are very nicely matched. Once again, an old quarterback and a young quarterback. It's got a lot of similar stories here. You know, we've seen Drew Brees do this before. We've seen the Saints do it before. We've seen them do it in their building before, and that particular unique home field advantage. But the Rams are an unusual team, and they've been on the rise for a little while here now. A 32-year-old coach going in against and trying to scheme against a quarterback who is literally, 8 years older than him. You know, it's pretty amazing stuff. Let's talk about Los Angeles and New Orleans. Who do we like?
It continues to be one of the Mitch. This weekend, we've talked about this before. Nothing like this has happened. The age difference between the two quarterbacks in the game we just talked about, 18 years, okay? The age difference between the quarterbacks in the next game, 16 years. The 240-something quarterbacks trying to play themselves to the Super Bowl. That to me is, you can't talk about that enough. But having said that, I think the wild card on Championship Sunday is Jared Goff. okay, and how much he will rely on his running game, because we talked about this on Monday, Mitch and Bob. Remember, the one thing that travels against all the noise they're going to face, or even if they were playing in conditions like the Patriots, and is a running game. And we saw a running game last week from the Rams, the likes of which I can't remember in the NFL playoffs.
No, there's no doubt about it. And this is the best defensive units that we've ever seen from a New Orleans team, including the year they won the Super Bowl. So it's going to be an interesting thing. But you're right, that was eye-opening, because we're used to Gurley. But C.J. Anderson, what a story. If he were to come anywhere close to replicating this, when you consider that not too long ago, he was on the sidewalk, you know, selling pencils and used apples, you know, and rattling a tin cup. Nobody wanted him. He was and here he is, and the stage. It's really, it isn't.
Are tin cups still a thing, Mitch? Yeah,
or a rotten apple still a thing? I didn't know that you could sell rotten apples. I thought they had to be new apples.
That's why we have Bob. That's why Bob's with us.
Yeah, you've got. Listen, this is a parallel story here, because the running games, I think, as great as the quarterback stories are, and I agree with you, Mike. The wild card is got to be Goff, but he's a wild card because you don't know how he's going to perform in a game like this. But not necessarily the wild card meaning he's going to be the critical determinant.
No. I mean, I got a big question mark on his back, Mitch. That's what I got.
Right, but Todd Gurley is the story of the Rams, and Todd Gurley, along with C.J. Anderson, create a very, very tough matchup. Almost as tough as Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram on the other side. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, two rushing games going up against one another, and whichever team is going to be able to stop the other one on third down with those running backs, you get third and short, you know, you could go either way. Either quarterback could throw, you know, a 10-yard pass, or either running back could pick up the 2 or 3 yards that you need. So it's really tough to defense against this. And third and one isn't going to be much of a challenge for either one of these teams. And I think a lot, this game is probably going to be won on a lot of those downs, you know, where does one team's defense stop the running game of the other team's defense? The quarterbacks are going to get their yards, and Drew Brees is going to be Drew Brees. My instinct on this one is stronger than my instinct on the other game. I feel New Orleans is going to win this game. I think Drew Brees and the way that these guys have come along and that building and all that stuff, it just feels like it's going to happen there. And the Rams are still a coming team, and you know, there's no shame in getting to the NFC Championship game for them, given the way that they're steadily rising. And I fully expect them to be back there next year if they're all healthy again. But this feels easier for me to make a pick that the Saints are going to win this game than it does to make a pick in the other one.
If I were betting my own money, I would bet I would back every bet I made on what you just said. But I got a feeling about the Rams, and it's as cockeyed as the feeling I have about the Patriots, despite their road record over the last decade. And there's a guy that we need to talk about here. There's two guys we need to talk about here. One is Wade Phillips, who is doing the work of his career with the Rams. I honestly believe that. And I'm going to throw two names at you, Bobby, okay? Can Tlaib shut down Michael Thomas? Because you can't you cannot beat the Saints if you cannot shut down Michael Thomas.
That is why I am excited to see this game, is because I want to see this guy again. What we saw last week, I mean, I don't go too hyperbolic. I'd say one of the great performances of history, but it was as entertaining a wide receiver show as I can recall, period.
Oh, that God, unbelievable. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, so, and Tlaib's a quality guy, but if he can put a rubber stamp on that one, then they are going to win.
Well, you remember when they played during the regular season, and I think Tlaib was out, Marcus Peters was the guy who kept getting picked on, the Rams cornerback, and after the game, Sean Payton said that, you know, we like that matchup. And Marcus Peters was saying, oh, well, we'll have a little bowl of gumbo together later on in the season. Well, here's the moment, and here's the gumbo. You're in the right city. And so Marcus Peters has clearly got motivation to try to make up for that. But, I mean, you can have all the motivation you want. Thomas is really, really talented. And if Drew Brees makes that connection to him this week like he did last week, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. But my guess is, Bob, that they know that the Rams are studying that tape, And if Sean Payton's half the coach that I think he is, he's not going to scheme the same game as last week going into this week and say, hey, guess what? We're going to throw the ball 1,000 times to Michael Thomas. So, what did he have, 12 catches or something and 200 yards? I think he's going to do something different. And you know, they may load up to try to, you know, guard against him, and Drew Brees will go someplace else. I just think that Brees, unless the L.A. defense really messes him up, and you know, he's not, he is 40, did he turn 40 or he's about 40 or whatever, 40, you know, he's not going to run away from a whole lot. And if they put a lot of pressure on him, then, you know, it's a different ball game. But there's something in my gut that just says that this is New Orleans, which is probably going to mean L.A. will win by 20, by the way.
We're going to hear a lot. But what a fascinating figure, especially at this time of the year, that Tlaib is. Okay, it seems like he should be 40 years old. He's only 32 years old. He's played for four different teams. And I just have a feeling that where Thomas goes on Sunday, he's going to go.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean he's going to win the matchup all the time either.
Mitch, the way to bet is New Orleans. The way to bet is the Superdome. I just wonder if the Rams might, that it may just be their time the way it's the Chiefs' time. That would be a great turning of the page in this sport if it's Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff and the Rams in the Super Bowl.
Well, it really would be, and that's a good point, Mike, because if they do win, and if they win in some kind of decisive manner. Again, you're looking at New Orleans coming back with a 41-year-old Drew Brees, you know, by the time you get to next season. I don't know. Maybe that window starts to close there. Clearly, Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay have a huge uphill challenge ahead of them if they've still got any gas in the tank. The Dallas Cowboys, you know, still a question mark, but they're probably more of a team to look for than Green Bay is. And suddenly, you know, could the NFC could basically be the LA Rams for a long time. If they take this next step and they get to the Super Bowl and they've got that experience behind them, because experience is pretty much the only thing that they're missing, you know, along with a razor to shave because they're all too young, you know. So, yeah, it's a big moment. It's one of those sort of sea change moments in the power structure of the conference. And if the Rams win, we're going to have some different discussions about what next year is going to look like once we see who wins the Super Bowl. What an interesting potential of Super Bowls, you know, when you move the shells around. You know, on the one hand, you really want to see New Orleans against New England, right? I mean, you want to see a 41-year-old against a 40-year-old in a Super Bowl. All of us who have past that age want to see that. That's a great game. What could be better than that? On the other hand, how great is the L.A. Rams against the Kansas City Chiefs? You know, that's a fantastic
game. In the year of 54-51, Mitch.
Right, right. So, I can't lose in this. You know, I just hope there aren't blowouts, and it's not like, oh, we're not here on Monday talking about, you know, what happened to the. I just hope we get some good games.
Gentlemen, I'm throwing something in here just for the. I was thinking about this week, and I wasn't sure, and I just looked it up. We all know that the Chargers, Raiders won a championship while playing in Los Angeles, which people, you know, widely ignored though they were. And we all know that the St. Louis Rams won with the greatest show on turf. How far back do you think we have to go for the Los Angeles Rams to have won an NFL championship?
It was like the early 50s, wasn't it? Wasn't Bob Waterfield the quarterback?
And Crazy Legs Hirsch.
Oh, God.
1951. So you'd have to be pretty old to remember when the L.A. Rams, who I grew up, you know, in the 50s, thinking it were a glamour team, though, you know, that you'd see the Coliseum and Hollywood and all. And of course, you did have Crazy Legs and Tom Fears, who once held the record for most receptions in a game, and Bob Waterfield and Norm Van Brocklin on the same team. Anyway, 1951.
Somebody's been doing their homework, yeah. Mitch. Somebody's been.
That's not homework for Bob. That's memory.
And Mitch, 1951, that's even longer ago than the Lions last won.
That's right. Lions owned the 50s decade, you know. We call that the glory years.
Now, we don't want to exit any Rams discussion without paying Sports Reporters Podcast homage to the best player on the team. who yesterday was named as the Professional Football Writers Defensive Player of the Year. So we congratulate you, Aaron Donald, on the eve of this game.
And you're right. We should have mentioned him a lot earlier because he's the guy who can do to Drew Brees what I said can mess up the Saints. And, you know, between him and Sue drawing the coverage that he does, and they're tough up front. And if Aaron Donald is in Drew Brees' face and you know, gets a couple of sacks and rattles him up, it's not the same game anymore. We'll see. But, yeah. Good. Thanks for bringing that up, Bob. Because
before we exit though, football, this number just jumps out at us. As we well know, both of these games are rematches of what were considered to be the two epic games of the season.
Yep.
The average point score among the four teams of the two games that were played was 47 points. The one game was 43-40, and the other game was 54-51. The average is exactly 47 points per game by each of the four teams.
This prediction I will make, and I feel pretty good about this one. The average score of these games is going to be half that.
I'd say 30. So good.
Yeah, what's the over-under number in KC? What should the over-under number be in KC?
Well, it isn't the same as it was during the regular season. I know that, and defense is going to end up playing a huge part of it.
I'm going to establish an over under number in Kansas City of 45, and knowing that, you're right, Mitch. It'll probably be 48-42.
Yeah. All right, let's shift over to the NBA. There's a lot of stuff going on in the NBA right now. Golden State seems to have righted their ship. LeBron James continues to be out. There's goings on with James Harden and the else. What's sort of grabbing your interest in the NBA headlines?
Well, I think the headliners who are playing like headliners again, and led by, you know, it's funny, Mitch, when we look at the Warriors who are about to get Boogie Cousins back on the court, okay, which will make them even more fascinating. You know, it's always, is it Durant's team? Is it Steph Curry's team? Boy, lately it's looked like Steph Curry's team. I told you a line that Jeff Van Gundy gave me not long ago about Steph Curry's ego or lack thereof. And he said, Steph Curry got over himself a long time ago. And boy, he's just looked, when he's healthy, you know, and that can be problematic with this young man because he does look frail sometimes. You see whose basketball team it is.
He's had an incredible week. He just keeps stretching the boundaries of what he does. There was a quote from Steve Kerr, who is really a delight. He continues to be a delight to have in our midst and for media to have.
Like having Pop and him at the same time, Bob. That's just a wealth of intelligence.
But he is marveling now at the ever-increasing distance at which this guy shoots.
Right.
I mean, he seems to expand his range yearly. We're talking 3, 4, 5 steps behind that arc. We're talking now. We're definitely talking. In fact, there is a stat. I don't know what. Maybe one of you guys, but maybe we can get it. But you know, because they do measure shots now in the league. Everything is measured in all sports. We know that. And his field goal percentage on 35 feet and beyond is astonishing. I mean, at 35, come on. I mean, this is a whole new realm. But someone made a very good observation the other day, by the way, that he is messing up basketball everywhere. And from youth leagues on up, all these kids are launching bombs from, you know, these intergalactic distances because they all want to be Steph Curry. I mean, he's having a huge effect on the game of basketball throughout this country, period.
You know, that's a really interesting point because, you know, there are a lot more kids that are closer to Steph Curry's height than there are to, you know, 6'11". And when kids are coming up, if they're going to pick somebody, they're going to, you know, pick somebody that they can envision themselves as, and they're playing youth basketball. You're right. We were all, you know, when we were younger, we were trying to do the moves of the guys that we were watching play out on the court ourselves. And that, I could see high school coaches everywhere saying, no, get closer before you shoot. Get closer before you shoot. We don't shoot from the half court line. And you know, the kids in their mind saying, but Steph Curry does. It's all fine and good if you can get the form that Steph Curry has in his shot, but that's, you know, once in a generation type of shooter. So it isn't good for the game, but you're right. The chuck up, what we used to call, you know, that's a chuck, has now become, you know, why shouldn't I make that shot? Yeah, the norm, because Steph Curry makes it the norm. But let's face it, you know, they are, Mike, your point is interesting about whose team is it. But the fact is, the collective talent on that team, especially when they bring Cousins back in, you know, you're adding a 6'11" center all of a sudden. Oh, yeah, let's throw that on a team that's already got Kevin Durant and already got Steph Curry and already got Draymond Green and Iguodala and Klay Thompson and all the rest of the guys. So they're remarkable. The game that they played, the first quarter that they played against Denver, they scored 51 points in the first quarter. Now, granted, you can't score 51 points in the NBA unless the other team's defense sucks, and it clearly did. But still, be able to put up 51 points in a quarter is just, that's the simmering explosiveness of the Golden State Warriors. And to me, when we talked about the New England Patriots and, you know, how they're different at the end of the season, I think Golden State has gotten into that zone as well, where the regular season is just sort of, yeah, but. And they're 31-14 now, which is perfectly great. It's not, you know, 38-6, you know, the way we used to watch Golden State. You used to watch them every year to see, you know, is this the year they're not going to lose 10 games? But it doesn't matter, is my point. It doesn't matter what their record is. They can get to the playoffs and play a different kind of basketball, the same way New England can get to the playoffs and play a different kind of football.
And Mitch, they were, 73-9 and didn't win. Okay, right. So yeah. In so the old days, we would have looked at 31-14 and said, gee, are the wheels coming off with the Warriors? I keep thinking about this. Boogie, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens when you add him to the mix. Because, Mitch, the game you just referenced, and Bobby, I thought about this the other day. If there's been one statement game so far in the NBA this season, it was what the Warriors did to Denver in Denver the other night, because they didn't just beat them, they threw them down a flight of stairs. And Denver had for most of the season been the best team in that conference, and they clearly came out wanting to make a statement.
Without any question, that was a benchmark game in the NBA season for the Warriors and for the league. We are who you remember us as being, and we are going to be that again game against the team that had a very, very good year. There's no question about that. The Cousins thing, I can't wait to see this, because I don't know how they're going to employ him. You just don't know how it's going to fit. To what extent can they exploit his? Are they willing to exploit his inside might? Is his best benefit going to be rebounding and block and clogging the lane as opposed to offense? I don't know, but it's a weapon. I mean, he was declared by Kerr himself the other day, saying he's the most skilled or the guy at that position in the league. And they have him all of a sudden. Why they have him is another story entirely. It's going to be, it's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I remember when we talked about LeBron James's injury on Christmas, and you know, I said, be careful. You know, he's not Superman, despite the fact that we all think he is, and he plays like that. And there does come a time in a guy's career where injuries start to become a factor, and groin injuries are one of those areas where you think you're healed and then they recur, or the other side recurs because you're favoring it, whatever. I remember I got a little pushback on that. Oh, well, it's just a little injury to LeBron James. He's been out for 12 games now, and that's what groin injuries do. And LeBron James is camp, and the people that he surrounds himself with, and you know, he's very, very careful to cultivate I'm fine image. And most of his career he has been. He's been an unbelievable physical specimen. But there's no denying that he's taking this very seriously, and it's taking him seriously for him to miss that many games. And he's now just saying he's going to start practicing with the team. So that doesn't mean he's going to start playing. And you know, they are clearly a different team without him. Who wouldn't be a different team without him? I don't know if they would even be a .500 team without him. They haven't been .500 since he's been gone. So this is a little asterisk to add on to LeBron James that we've never considered before because he's just been remarkably healthy. But, you know, a kid who started pounding NBA floors at 18 or 19 and is now his age, this is going to be a factor for him the rest of his career.
You know, right now, Mitch, without him, they have fallen into the eighth slot in the Western Conference. And I always love this because you say if the season ended today, well, the season's not ending today, but if it did, it'd be them and the Warriors in the first round.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I think he'd come back for that. But, you know, Bob, you watch more of this than all of us. I don't know if, you know, sometimes when your star player goes out, it can actually be a healthy thing in the middle of the season because other guys learn and they step up, they increase their roles. And then when he comes back, they're all the better. I don't know if that's happening with them. Like, I keep hearing whenever I read, boy, you know, they look like crap, or Lonzo Ball's, you know, can't shoot, and all, you know, and this guy's not stepping up. So are they getting any better in his absence? Are they pulling anything together, or are they just floundering?
The record shows that they aren't. Now, they had a good game last night. I do not know to what extent that was an aberration, or maybe they've learned something, but they had an overtime victory with a good performance from a number of people, starting with Kyle Kuzma. Also, Ball had a good game. And so we'll see about that. But no, the record clearly is that they miss him badly. The other thing about him is that it's not the normal circumstance of – there's obviously – there are different types of great players, obviously. And he is the queen on the chessboard player of our generation, maybe of all time, who is versatile and has so many tentacles, you know, and affects everybody and sooner or later. So it's not like you're just removing a great scorer or a great rebounder or a great shooter. You're removing a great player in every phase of the game that you get to be dependent on and who makes other players more. I hate that phrase, makes them better. He complements everybody in a way that other people can't. So they've clearly have missed him. Now, I don't know. Let's see what they do. Last night was a nice night for them, but let's see if they can build on it.
Nice night. They ring up the Thunder in overtime for 138. The thing that his absence may reap this benefit. I mean, Kuzma is becoming a flat-out NBA star. Lonzo Ball has played well. And every time the big guy, Zubac, plays a game like he does last night, you think he's going to be the X factor. So we'll see. But, you know, it's such a competitive conference as always. I mean, stop me if you've heard this one before. There are 10 teams in the Western Conference with over 500 records this year, which means two teams on the outside looking in right now. Okay, one of them is the Utah Jazz, who have righted the ship. There are five teams in the Eastern Conference with over 500 records. Of those teams, the Celtics have the worst one right now.
No, it's nothing has changed. The East is better at the top than it's been in years. Five teams of quality for sure, but overall, the West is still the dominant conference, and that's sobering. Those are sobering numbers you just gave us, Mike. And there's no question.
And Mitch, here's the thing about the NBA this year. There are, like, you wake up in the morning, even if you didn't even look in on the games, there's two, like, interesting scores every night. One of them was in Indianapolis last night, where the Sixers went in, and the Pacers once again have been the mystery guest, great team of the year. They nearly have a 667 winning percentage and got beat by 24 at home by the Sixers.
Yeah. Well, I just think that the regular season games are like that in the NBA. So much of it is who was traveling, and did you have, you know, are you coming off a back to back, or you played three games in 5 days versus a team that's had 2 days off. I don't put a lot of stock in any individual game. There are a few statement games. You know, I think that Denver Golden State game was, as we pointed out, we're not just going to try to win this. We're going to try to show our dominance, and Golden State did. And there are a handful. You know, some of the feature games on Christmas or on other holidays that teams get up for. But by and large, to pull anything from an individual meeting in the middle of the NBA season is folly in my mind. You got to look at the overall performances. And Bob, you're right about the East. You know, there's a lot of teams that are doing well in the East. But if you wanted to consider the overall, you still look at the West and you say, okay, if they all played in the same conference and they were all one-on-one, would Milwaukee, Toronto, Indiana, and Philadelphia, the top four teams in the East, be matching up with Golden State, Denver, Oklahoma City, Portland, Houston, the top teams in the West? And I think you'd end up giving the nod to most of the teams in the West. But only one team can come out of each, so...
Bob, let me ask you a Celtics question. How about Mr. Irving's mea culpa this week with the king himself? Is this an example of somebody getting religion a little late in the church service?
Well, maybe it is, but he is eternally fascinating as an individual.
Kyrie, you mean? Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving talks a lot. Obviously, feels that sees himself as an intelligent person. Aches to be the leader. And do we take this at face value that he has got that religion? That it was a sincere apology to LeBron. That he really understands things now that he didn't 3 years ago, and is prepared to lead this team now. And that, you know, off the court as well as on. Or was it some grandstand thing telling the world? Did he have to tell the world? I'm not sure exactly how it came up. You know, did he, oh, by the way, guys, I called LeBron, or did someone get wind of it? Or I don't know how it came up. So you can look at it that way. But Mike and Mitch, since from the day he came into Boston and coming off the flat earth thing, you know, we said, oh boy, we got somebody different here. He talks all the time. He's never not talking about stuff. And, you know, he called out the team last week. He called out the young players. Apparently, Brown, for example, Jaylen Brown didn't like it very much. He's always news, you know.
Yeah, I always get the feeling, with Kyrie Irving that I'm sitting in on a therapy session, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
And I'm just listening to him, you know. But then I think this. But sometimes I feel this. But also I get a feeling like this. Except he does it in press conferences, and he does it around his locker, you saw Charles Barkley's reaction to that. Like, I would have whooped his ass for saying those things that he did. So, you know, be careful.
Oh, well.
Be careful. Not that Charles Barkley is an arbiter of anything, but be careful about analyzing yourself in front of today's media, because you're going to end up coming back on yourself many times, contradicting yourself many times, because we all do with our thoughts. Our thoughts frequently go to the left and go to the right. But the difference is that most people sort of keep them to themselves until they've come to a conclusion. He seems to just keep running. You know, he's doing like the, you know how they do those math equations, those real geniuses on the board, you know, and they write all these massive math equations. We're like watching his whole math equation. He's telling us the whole thing. Now, all we really want to know is when he gets to the bottom and the equals sign, you know, and then, okay, what does it equal? And that's what we want to be told. But we're getting all the stuff in between. And you're right. It's fascinating, but it's also can get him in trouble. Within a league that, you know, everything's a tweet.
Thus far, he can't help himself. You're right, Mitch. You're right. This is exactly what it's like. And it's been this way from day one. And it's ongoing. There's no signs of it stopping. Now, on the other thing is, we were reminded, if you needed any reminding, because he missed the game when they got beaten by Brooklyn Monday night, how good he is. And this game he played in a wonderful fourth quarter battle of superstar one-upsmanship between himself and Kawhi Leonard with 27 points and, oh, by the way, 18 assists, a career high, with big shot after big shot, was a reminder of just what a tremendous talent that he is and remains. And so, you know, that's the whole package.
Give Mr. Irving a piece of advice from Mr. Parcells, who once and famously said, "It's not my job to take my team's temperature for the media every single day."
Well said. Hey, before we get to our parting shots, I want to just bring up one thing with you guys quickly. We talked on Monday about quarterback transfers and how it affects the game of college football and how this has become the absolute new norm and pieces on the chessboard. And that was before Jalen Hurts added on to that discussion by announcing that he's going to, of all places, Oklahoma. And he's one and done, that's for sure, in Oklahoma. But he steps into a place where the last two quarterbacks have won the Heisman Trophy and have both been first round, I assume Murray's going to be a first round pick. And then steps in and is going to take over Riley's system there in Oklahoma. I just find this sort of the cherry on the sundae of this whole discussion, that a guy who a couple of years ago people were saying, you know, is the greatest quarterback on the greatest team and then gets benched in the biggest championship game, now gets this third act with a team that everybody said was, you know, a hair away from winning the national championship itself.
I don't think he's great. I think he's a fine college.
Wow.
No. I not once have I ever watched him play college football and thought I was witnessing greatness. You watch Kyler Murray for 5 minutes and you know. You watch Tua come out of nowhere, okay? And only people in Tuscaloosa knew about Tua when he came off the bench in the championship game. I think he will be well served by playing for Lincoln Riley. I think he runs way better than he throws. But no, Mitch, honestly, there has never been one time when I watched him, even at his best, and he played a wonderful game against Clemson, okay, and ended up losing because he scored too soon at the end. Did I think that I was in? If they win another Heisman with him at quarterback, I'll be dead wrong. But I've never seen him as that kind of guy.
Wow. I wouldn't go so far as to say I saw instant greatness, but I'll tell you what, I was very impressed with him. The very first time I saw him, I thought, oh my God, Alabama now has finally a dynamic quarterback, not just another game manager, you know, with a pretty girlfriend in the stands, you know, dazzling network announcers. They've got a really dynamic electric quarterback to enhance their offense. That's Jalen Hurts, who of course has been out celebrated by Tua. But no, I thought he was pretty damn good. And I think you're right. Putting him in the hands of Lincoln Riley, oh boy, let's step back and see what we get.
I think he's going to be phenomenal there. The last time he was the starter for Alabama, he threw 17 touchdown passes and one interception. That's not average. He threw for over 2,000 yards. He completed over 60% of his passes. And you're right, Bob. You know, a lot of times with Nick Saban, the quarterbacks have not necessarily been the story. You know, he likes to run, he likes defense and all that. And Jalen Hurts, I remember, you know, you have to go back a little bit in your mind. I remember being very impressed with him when he was the starter and just thinking he was, you know, he was, if he wasn't one or two, or he was certainly three, a third best of the quarterbacks who were out there that year. Now he goes to Oklahoma, a system that loves to put up points, and he's going to play a lot of teams that he's going to be able to put up points against, because the teams that Oklahoma plays are not as good as the teams that Alabama plays on a regular basis during the regular season. And he's a senior. Mike, we never see this. You know, most of these guys are on the younger end when they're already talking about going to the NFL. He's eking out every little drop of his eligibility here. So the mind part of the game, the smarts part of the game, is going to be there as well. I just find the whole thing, it's such a sea change. You know, although there have been transfers before, I don't want to act like this is brand new, but the fact that a guy of his once stature now just shifts over to Oklahoma for a year, and Oklahoma is basically like home of the transfers now. I don't even know if they recruit anybody for quarterback, although they got this kid that they brought in, and they, you know, who knows, he may transfer too before he plays a game. Rattler, his name is Spencer Rattler, and he's supposed to be this, you know, star high school quarterback, you know, and he may get dissatisfied sitting there on the bench even though the guy's going to leave, and he may transfer too. I just think it's weird that you're starting to see star players whose names are recognizable from one school leading another school at quarterback. I don't think it's good for the game.
I think he's a fine player. He may light it up at Oklahoma. All I know is that the reason Tua became Tua, and everybody can have a bad night, is that he couldn't complete a pass against Georgia in the championship game, and that's why he got sat down.
Huh. All right, time for our parting shots, and Mr. Ryan, why don't you lead us off?
I woke up Wednesday morning, and I thought I was Marty McFly in Back to the Future. It was as if the NBA was 1967 all over again, and the Sixers were averaging 125 a game, where 1972 and the Lakers were putting up 121 a night. The Warriors rang up a franchise league-high record of 51 in the first quarter against Denver. The Warriors, 76ers, Hawks, and Pacers averaged 141 points among them on Tuesday night. Now, not all that long ago, the NBA was in the grips of an ice age, with too many coaches who were happier when their team did not have the ball than when it did. But it looks as if they've all taken a healthy dose of Mike D'Antoni pills, because the league has once again embraced offense. These lofty scores aren't strictly the product of the three-pointer, although that helps for sure. No, it's more about tempo. Teams are pushing it. Teams really want to score. 20 years ago, that was not the case. Now, you know who benefits most? You, the fan. These are great athletes. They should be let loose. And now they have been. P.S. Wait. On Wednesday night, the Nets, Rockets, Warriors, and Pelicans all broke 140. Told ya.
If there's a coach of the year just for the NBA season that has been played so far, it is unquestionably a basketball lifer named Kenny Atkinson of the Brooklyn Nets. If you're from New York, you know that the Nets have always been the other team in basketball there. Even in an era when the Knicks haven't just been bad, they have been biblically bad. One playoff victory in a series since the 2000 season. The Nets were the other team in New York, even when they weren't even New York, but were making two NBA finals playing over in Jersey. Then they traded for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and every other ancient Celtic, except perhaps Bob Cousy, and traded away a fistful of draft picks and their future. And now they have fought back this season. The other night, as Bob referenced, on the road in Houston, they rang up the Rockets for 148 points and got their record to 500 and are currently the next team after, wait for it, the Celtics in the Eastern Conference playoff standings. They got a bunch of guys you've never heard of. They've got a smart GM in Sean Marks, but the credit goes to Atkinson. He isn't coaching the other team in New York this season. He's coaching the only team in New York this season.
You got to admit that LeBron James has done a pretty good job bottling up the endless hype machine known as LeVar Ball. Since King James got to L.A., you don't see Big Ball anywhere near the Lakers media, and his son Lonzo may be breathing a sigh of relief. But LeBron doesn't patrol the high school world, and so the news comes now that the king of exploitative sports dads is now charging media outlets $3,500 if they want to film any of his youngest son, LaMelo, playing his high school games. Now, how a kid who has already played pro ball overseas gets to play in high school at all is a big enough question. But then Spire Institute isn't really a high school as much as an excuse for basketball and Mr. Ball to do whatever he wants. Amazingly, several media outlets have actually reportedly agreed to pay $3,500 to film this kid in action. Hey, suckers, I got two words for you. YouTube. It's likely someone will sneak a GoPro camera in and throw up the footage on there for free. Meanwhile, Daddy Ball continues to find new ways to turn his kids into cash cows, even if the shoe deals and the billions he once predicted have now come down to chump change. I can hardly wait to see how the NCAA deals with all this when LaMelo, as his daddy predicts, tries to go to college. LeVar will probably want to charge each school to read his kid's application. That's going to do
you
it for today.
You just made that whole thing up.
No, it's all facts. I studied the tape.
Just unbelievable.
That's going to wrap up the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do it every Monday and Friday, so we'll be back in just a few days, and that'll be fun to wrap up the big NFL games. If you haven't heard us before, please tell some of your friends that we're out here. If they enjoyed the TV show, they should enjoy the podcast as well. Leave us a comment if you like, good, bad, or otherwise. And you know you can find us on all outlets, including, of course, radio.com. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.